Open up for questions. Let me just share a few things with you again, this is just my opinion about some of this from my experiences. But what I would say, let me see if I can get this to run. Is that if you understand the parable of the sower, were all of you here last night? Anybody that wasn't here? Okay, that's right. Well, the parable of the sower was about doing what? Sowing the seed. And you notice he wasn't a soil inspector. He wasn't a soil preparer. He was just sowing it. And if we really truly understand the statement that the power is in the gospel, then that should be our purpose. To get the gospel in front of somebody. And I've gotten to the point now where I will not discuss anything with anybody unless I first discuss the gospel. If somebody comes at me and they've got some deep question they want to talk about, I'll say, that's a great question. And I'll use that as an opportunity to say, look, give me an hour first and let me explain the gospel. I was telling them yesterday, I had a Pentecostal guy came up. He said, Ken, I've got 30 questions about the Church of Christ I want to discuss with you. I said, I'm your man. But I said, Brian, we're just going to start arguing because we don't see the Bible the same way. Would you give me an hour and let me explain how I see the Bible and then we can discuss your questions? He said, sure. Because, you know, what can you do in an hour? Right? And I shared the gospel with him and his wife. And when I finished, he sat there just quiet. He didn't say a word. Finally, he spoke and he said, I can see the truth in this. He said, what's hanging me up is, how is it possible that of all the books I've read over the years and all the preaching that I've listened to over the years, I've never heard this before? That's a good question, isn't it? And I just went back to Galatians 1. I said, look, Brian, I said, before the apostles were off the scene, Christians were changing the gospel for their own reasons. I said, now how many gospels do you think there are now in the last 2,000 years? Hundreds? Thousands? That's the work of the devil to try to keep people from hearing the gospel. And then we help him out because we know the gospel and we don't bother telling anybody about it. So they hold sway with false gospels. And he said, yeah, I see that. I said, now the problem is, now that you see the truth in this, what are you going to do about that? So baptize him and his wife right then. We hadn't discussed any of those 30 questions. But afterwards, we then did. And this is the point I want to make, is that the gospel itself becomes a tremendous foundation for discussing any questions people have. There was this one guy that a lawyer called me, and he said he was working with this Baptist lawyer that he'd been teaching for years and couldn't get anywhere with. He said, Ken, I'd like you to come over and do this presentation to him. I said, look, you know this. You do it. He said, yeah, but I need somebody other than myself. And I could see the value there. So I went over, and I started into the presentation. And I was very early on. You remember when I was talking about free will? And he stops me and he points his finger at me and he says, explain to me about the thief on the cross. Now, in the past, I would have taken that question and in 5 minutes we'd have been arguing about baptism and he would have never even heard the gospel. But I said, you know, that's a great question. Let me finish this and I'll come back and take it because I told you I'd do this in about... He said, okay. Okay, yeah, because that was his killer argument, I guess. And so when I finished, he leaned back and he said, you know, he said, I'm a lawyer. This is a compelling argument. And I said, well, now let me take your question about the thief on the cross. I said, now, if you notice, when Christ was on earth, he was God on earth. He could forgive sins on whatever basis he chose to. And he did so on several occasions. But after his death burial, and resurrection. He commanded us to extend salvation only on the basis of his death, burial, and resurrection. He said, I can see that. That was it. That was a whole discussion about that. But had I answered that question earlier, the gospel provides a great foundation for answering other questions to lead back to. Lead with the gospel. This was so hard for me to learn. Just, you know, because I always learn, well, if you're talking to an atheist, you need to start here. And if you're talking to a teenager or a college student, you go here. And if you're talking, you know, I had all these different scenarios. But what people need to hear is the gospel. That's where the power is. I had this one guy that was that I had worked with in the Netherlands for several years. And afterwards, we had been executives together in some companies. And he asked me one day. And I didn't have the courage to explain the gospel to him for years. In fact, it was during that relationship that I connected the dots with the sacrificial system. And so one day I said, Rob, he asked me, he said, Ken, why is it that you never lie? He said, you won't lie about anything, and it would make things so much easier. And I said, well, give me some time. So I went over and I explained the gospel to him. And he said, that's really interesting. He said, I never had heard that before. I didn't know that's what the Bible was all about. He was a scientist by training. And so after that, I sent him the book by Lee Strobel, The Case for Christ. It's a very good sort of evidences book. It kind of hits the postmodern mind. But I sent it to him after I shared the gospel with him. And he read the book. He lived across the country from me. He called me. He said, Ken, if this is true, why isn't everybody a Christian? Great question. So then we started talking. And he started asking me questions about evidences, and I'd tell him what I knew, and pretty soon I was sending him books. I can't read this book. And pretty soon, for 2 years, he studied this stuff. And he called me up one day, and he said, I want to be baptized. Kind of kill me. Then he started doing lectures. He had accumulated so much material. He wanted other people to know that there was reasons to believe. And he called me one day and he said, Ken, I'm going to write a book. And I want you to write a chapter in this on the plan of redemption. He said, because that shows the incredible unity of the Bible. So you can buy a book now on evidences called Prepared to Answer. By this guy. Chapter 24 was written by me on the plan of redemption. But isn't that just great? But lead with the gospel. I tell you, you're going to have a hard time doing this. It's going to be hard. But it's so simple, too. You know, present the gospel. And if they start bombarding you with questions you can't answer, well, call Alan or call Ted or get somebody to help you or get us, you know. But get the gospel in front of them. That's what they need to hear. That's where the power is. If it's going to, people, when they hear it, they know it's true. They may not believe it. They may reject it. But somehow they know there's something. This makes too much sense about this book. They can see that there's truth there. You know, I had a cousin that was the 4 years older than me. He was a guy that, as I was growing up, my parents would say, why can't you be like him? You know, he made great grades, and he was an architect, and he went on to teach at a Methodist college, and I was always afraid of him. And my aunt was dying. We were sitting next there. She was in a coma, and I said, Gary, we've never talked about religious things, and I flipped over to Galatians 1, and I just read that passage, and I said, I'd like to tell you what I think this gospel is. He said, okay. He wasn't afraid of me. And I went through it. And I got through Romans 6, connected all together. And he sat there for a minute and he said, yeah, that's right. But that's talking about spiritual baptism. Good answer. That's what theologically coached will do, because can't be water baptism. I said, well, you may be right. And I flipped over to Ephesians 4, and I said, but look here. Paul says there's only one baptism. And you're saying it's baptism of the heart, and I'm saying it's water baptism by faith. I said, how could we decide? I said, wouldn't it be great if somewhere we just had some examples of conversion? He said, yeah. So I went to Acts 2, and I went to the Ethiopian eunuch. I said, there it is. He said, yeah, you're right. That's water baptism. He said, I need to think about this. I said, okay. That's the last I heard from my cousin. Ever. But I'll tell you this. I know that he knows. And who knows what events may transpire in his life. A lot of times when I share the gospel with somebody, I don't get an immediate response. And I don't pressure them. Because I know they understand it. There's really just nothing to argue about in there, really. And sometimes I'll get a call from somebody a few days later. That Baptist lawyer, 2 weeks later, called and wanted to obey the gospel. You know, so it'll work on a good heart. Some people have to go away and count the cost. There's no point in pressuring them. Let them hear the gospel. And then let them respond however they feel that they need to respond. But you don't need to commit your life to trying to convert somebody that has rejected the gospel. Sow the seed and then move on to somebody else. Let them hear it. Lead with the gospel. You remember Paul at Mars Hill? Now, who are all those people at Mars Hill? All these philosophers and theologians, right? Remember Paul got in there and had discussions with them? But if you back up Acts 17, where did he start? Before that. He preached Jesus and the resurrection. He led with the gospel. And then some of them said, well, this guy's an idiot, and they just walked off. But others said, well, we'd like to hear more about this. But he started with the gospel, let it have its effect. Some just turned away and scoffed. And that's all I'm saying. That's what God's asked us to do. The power is in the gospel. It's taken me a long time to be just that dogmatic. I will not discuss any. If somebody comes to me, well, what about instrumental music? Why don't y'all use instrumental music? I'll say, well, look, that's something I'd love to talk with you about. Give me an hour and let me explain to you what I really believe about everything, and we can talk about that. Whatever I can, I use as a reason to get the gospel in front of somebody. So that's one question that I usually get. Let's see. What if they change the subject? Oh, this is the elephant in the room, is the one gospel. If they ask questions, see, this is another beauty of this thing. Make this a presentation. Don't ask somebody, can we have a Bible study? Purge that from your vocabulary. Make this a presentation. Have you got a few minutes and let me explain to you this, or let me present this to you? Let me tell you why I believe the Bible. Let me tell you why I believe Jesus Christ. Let me tell you what I believe is important about the church. Whatever you, but make it a presentation. And that way, people are much more interested in that, because it's like, hey, I don't have to say anything. I don't have to engage. I don't have to defend what I believe. They're just going to present something to me. And it's easier for you now, because all you got to do is present Jesus Christ and Him crucified. Explain that to somebody, how that works. Make it a presentation. So if you do that and they ask you a question, you know, then just deflect the question till the end. You know, if somebody wants to argue with you, and I usually tell them up front, now I'm just going to present this to you, and if you have any questions, if you don't understand something, ask me. But if you have any other questions, just hold them off till the end. Let me get through this first. I was in China. I was explaining the gospel to this Chinese guy, and he said, well, what is sin? Well, I kind of had to explain that. But I wasn't going to take the thief on the cross question. You see what I'm saying? Deflect. Make it a, so this is my advice to you. Make it a presentation. Defer questions till the end. If you can't answer the question, okay. You know, find a way to find somebody that can, or get some help, or whatever. But then that's the time. Get the gospel in front of them. Now try to have a Bible study with them. Now try to have a 3-month Bible study with them. Now set up the, use the gospel to set that up. The other thing that I've learned is use a flip chart. Now, when I first started sharing the gospel with people, I didn't use anything. I mean, I didn't even have to have a Bible. I'm not trying to do a Bible lecture. I'm not trying to reason with them. Do you understand the difference here? I'm not trying to reason with them. I'm just trying to present the gospel to them. And I can do that. I don't have to have the scripture right in front of me to read it to them. And it's good if you can. But when I first started doing this, all I used was my Bible. I'd just sit down and I'd flip through and read things and just do that way. But if I don't have my Bible, I can explain the gospel to somebody. I can paraphrase the things that I need to. But I was in Emory Hills in Atlanta. They had about 100 people on a Saturday that got together. We went through this. When we finished, David Maxson had taken some of my slides and printed them out. And the people, as they went out, collated these into a little notebook. They spent about 2 months after that practicing giving the presentation to each other. And then they hit the streets. And the teenagers were converting people. And the old ladies were converting people. And they almost had to stop. They were converting so many people because what do you do? Is our point just to go out here and baptize people? No. What do we have to do after we do that? We have to teach them. That's just as important. You know? And so they were running out of resources to teach people. And I was at a camp this one summer, and this 18-year-old boy came up and he said, "Are you Ken Craig?" And he said, "Yeah." And he said, "I just want to hug you, Nick. You want to hug me?" I said, "Okay." He said, "No." He said, "I don't understand." He said, "I want to thank you." He said, "When you did that series at Emory Hills, some of my friends heard it, and one night they took me out for pizza and explained the gospel to me, and I obeyed it." That was wonderful. And so David then started doing these flip charts, and this is the current incarnation. And you can just sit down, and now I carry one of these in my bag, wherever I go. You saw that picture of me last night in Tanzania. I had this under a tree, and I was going through it with that Muslim lady. And what I've discovered is this helps the presenter to know what to say next. And it helps the person that's listening to reinforce. Some people are more visual learners, and it helps. And it's been a very useful too. And if we had these, I would really actually try to go through it today and train you, so to speak, in how to do it. But you can role play these things. And in fact, I'm going to, is it Avon? I was there about a year ago. They've asked, as punishment, they asked me to come back and spend a few days. We're going to train the congregation how to use these. They're doing that. So maybe I'll horn in on them or something. I don't know. But these are very, very effective. Here's the second picture. This is the first picture I was ever made. I was doing this with a Pentecostal preacher in Grenada. And we were having lunch with him, and he said, "What are you doing here?" And we said, "Well, we're here doing some lectures." "What kind of lectures?" I said, "Well, they're on the Bible." And big picture. He said, "Well, I'd love to hear it." And I said, "Okay, got an hour?" He said, "Yeah." So, I mean, we just walked out there, and I just sat down, started going through this. And an hour later, he said, "You know, I missed it." He said, "I never understood that. I need to be baptized." We took him right then down to the Atlantic and baptized him. And he started the first church in that city in his house. 1 hour? A Muslim lady changes her whole life and willing to suffer persecution after a 1 hour introduction to Jesus Christ? The power is not in us. It's not in the flip chart. It's not in the PowerPoint. It's in that message. Dogmatically try to get that message across to people any way you can. Okay, that's some general stuff. Now let me take maybe some questions that you have.
If you ask any hard questions, well, Alan's here, he can answer that. Hunter went out in California, not supposed to be any rockier soil in the world. And the first 24 people he presented the gospel to obeyed the gospel. Now, I don't know, I think he may have been trying to set a record or something. But, you know, again, our focus is not the results. That's why people get excited, like, here's something that works. You know, well, our objective is to sow the seed. That's what I want to really get across. This is not, okay, now we've got something that'll work. What our goal is to share the gospel. And it'll have the effect God wants it to have. You remember Lydia? What does it say about her? Paul preached what? The gospel. And what happened? The Lord heard her heart. What was the key? The gospel. We need to just get the gospel out there. Let God worry about the hearts. Let him worry. We do our part. Let him do his part. But it sure isn't going to work if we don't do our part. This shouldn't be a program to try to get our numbers up, is what I'm saying. That's not our objective. But that's how people want to use this. Oh, let's get Ken Craig here because he knows how to convert people in one lesson. They miss the point. It's a siren song because we want our numbers to be, we want our numbers to grow.
We want God's numbers.
We want God's numbers. But I'm telling you this, if we do this, we'll be just as big as God wants us to be. And we'll get just as many converts. So don't make our objective to convert them. That's what happens when we start with somebody and we can't, you know, we want to argue with them and we want to spend all this time and debate and, you know, all that. The point is, let them hear the gospel. And if it doesn't appeal to them, if they reject it, move on and share it with somebody else. Now, I'm not saying that if somebody's got some questions, some honest questions, they're going to say, well, you know, I don't really understand this. Tell me how this works. Or let's talk about evidences or whatever. I'm not saying you shouldn't have those discussions. But don't make it your goal that I'm going to convert this person. We do this a lot of times with family members. We got to convert this aunt or this uncle or this brother or this sister because we love them. And we don't want to see them lost. But at the end of the day, it's their choice. It's all about free will. And God said, here's what they need to hear right here. The gospel. Let them hear it. And it'll call who I want it to call. It. And that's what our objective should be. Okay? What else?
Yes, sir. In your 1 hour, are you reading all the passages that are referenced in there, or how many passages?
It depends. Are referenced? It all depends. It depends on how much time I have. I mean, if I've got 30 minutes, I'll leave out some of it. You know, and if I've got plenty of time, I'll read everything in here and more. This is a summary of that whole presentation. Now, the little book that I wrote, by the way, I don't make anything on that book, so I'm not pushing the book. I wrote that book under protest. Some preachers just insisted that I do that. And so I wrote it, but I told them I wanted to keep it small, I wanted to keep the price low, and I wanted it to pretty much track the lecture. So if I give somebody a copy of the book, I only give it to them after I've presented the gospel to them. I would only give it to somebody as a track if that was the only contact I was ever going to have with them. Like if I see somebody in the airport or something.
They know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Y'all know about the book. Yeah, the little book, the big picture of the Bible. That essentially tracks the lectures. Okay? So it's pretty much with a little bit more, you know, content. But it's got some of the illustrations in here as well. Huh? Where can I get these, Ted? They've got a whole case of them back there. We keep those on our table just for the members, and they just go. And I know they're using them as tracks. But that's better than nothing. But ideally, my suggestion is the gospel is best presented, and let me, this is a good point too, one-on-one. Now, I'll present the gospel anytime I have an opportunity. If it's 800 people, Well, I'll do it with 800 people, but it's best to me to present it one-on-one. Because what happened, like, let's give you an example. I was in Tanzania, and they converted a number of people there. And I was sharing the gospel with this lady out in an open market area. And before I was finished, there were 17 people that walked up by the middle or near the end and didn't hear everything. And so when I finished, well, I knew there was a couple of people there that probably and would have responded. But these people started throwing up questions about baptism, because that's, they, you know. And I told this this translator guy, he's a Christian preacher, he started arguing about baptism. I said, you see what happens here? You're trying to have a discussion with somebody about baptism, and they've never heard the gospel. And so when you do that, you're just debating, why should we do this work? Why should I do this act of obedience? Baptism doesn't, I won't discuss baptism with anybody until they've heard the gospel. I don't know if you noticed when I brought up that first slide about the Great Commission, I just said, going to all the world, preach the gospel, every preacher. I didn't even put baptism on that chart. I don't want baptism even being discussed until they've heard the gospel. And so the other two ladies, I think, reconsidered at that point. Now, I heard that a couple days later they both obeyed the gospel. But be that as it may, it's best if you can do it one-on-one or with a couple. I'll tell you stories all day long. I got to tell you this story. This is a great story. I was in Chillicothe, Ohio. Dan DeGarmo, you know, well, Dan said, hey, Ken, I want you to come over and present this to Vince and Minerva. This is a Pentecostal couple that have been coming to their services. And so I went over to their house and went through the whole nine yards with them. And Minerva got it. I could tell she was ready to obey the gospel. But Vince wasn't sure. He said, you know, he said, this sounds really good. He said, I talk to the Holy Spirit every morning. I'm going to talk to him. I'm going to ask him in the morning if this is about this. I said, well, I'm taking this. And so he said, why not? He said, I'm taking this. This is curtain. I said, well, so nothing happened. Well, about a month later, I get a call from Dan. He said, you remember Vince? And I said, oh, yeah. So I'm thinking, oh, he's going to tell me Vince obeyed the gospel. No. He said, I just got a call from Vince. He was talking to his next-door neighbor and shared the gospel with him. And his next-door neighbor wants to be baptized. And Vince didn't know what to do, so he called me to see if I'd come over and baptize his next-door neighbor. Now, do you see the point? Vince heard it. He saw the truth in it. And he saw this is a great thing to explain to others, even though he hadn't obeyed it himself. And he's explaining the gospel of the truth. People know that it's true, whether they accept it or not. That's probably about the most incredible thing I've seen. Yes, ma'am. Somebody's interested, you know, I mean, I'm not saying you just walk, you know, tell it to walk away from everybody, but the main thing is for them to hear it. And you can always, if it's somebody you know, you can always try to follow up with them later. Have you thought about that, you know, since I talked to you? But the main thing is that they hear the gospel and give that opportunity to accept it or reject it. But there's an old movie called The Force 10 from Navarone. I don't know if you ever saw it. I'm an old war movie. But it's a great movie. They're trying to blow up this dam, and they don't have much dynamite left or whatever. And they go down in the dam, and they plant what they got, and they detonate it, and nothing happens. And they walk out of there like, oh, brother, we failed. And the demolition expert sitting up on the cliff smoking a pipe, and he's going, oh, no, this is good. And they're going, why? He said, this is good. This explosion initially just created this little. And then that little crack got a little bigger, a little bigger. Pretty soon that whole dam just blew to pieces. And to me, that's the way I see the gospel work. You're just trying to get that initial thing in there. It'll work on a good heart, but sometimes it takes some time. this is not something, you do whatever you want, but I'm saying I don't try to convince them. I want them to hear it.
In other words, we don't have to stay there until they are convinced.
No, I just put it out there. Would you like the dog with Crocs? If they do or they don't, you know what you get a lot of time. Oh, yeah, I was baptized when I was a baby. You know, they don't understand that. So then you can explain further what baptism is all about and try to understand that. I get a lot of that in the in Tanzania. Oh, yeah, I was baptized. And I want dinner to say, well, let me just ask you one question. Were you saved before you were baptized or after you were baptized? And if they say before, then I'll say, okay, we need to talk about this. And I'll go into more detail and explain that to you, so that they understand what that one baptism was. I'll do some, after they've heard the gospel, I'll discuss some of that. But yeah, you're right. It's hard to ever just walk away from somebody.
Well, and if you have a real appointment with somebody, or you're talking only with somebody at work, and you're talking, amongst doing other things, and then you have to,
Well, you don't want to do that. That's what you want to try to avoid is, try to get them to where you can get an hour or whatever you need. And to get through this in an hour, you got to really do it. I can do it. And you can do it. The Bible's a very misunderstood book, but I'll tell you why. Most people don't understand the context. So let me tell you a little bit about it. And I'll just read through this. 39 books and all that. The incredible thing, it has one thing. That's the plan of redemption. In the New Testament, it was called the gospel. Jesus commanded that people go out to teach that after he died. And the reason is because the gospel is the power of God to save. And I'm just walking through it. I can go at it pretty fast. But and what I find is people understand. I mean, I've been in, the Chinese and Russians and Hindus and, they understand. There's just never been any problem with anybody ever saying. There's not any argument about it generally. So I would try to get them outside of work. Say, could I just, we'll get together if you're talking about something over the top, you say, hey, can we get together maybe one night after work for an hour? Let me just explain this to you. So you've got a good rapport already. But it's not a pressure thing. It's not like, you need to do this, or but that's important. And I've just found a way to try to wrap it up congenially. You might say, now, are you interested to study this further? Make that option. Now I've involved a study. And you'll find that study will take on a whole different complexion because you've got the gospel to come back to when you're about to discuss it. But Ted here is a man that's very good at coming up with how to establish a rapport with people. I'm not an expert on that, but I'm just always thinking when I'm talking to somebody, how can I find what I do? I mean, I know there are guys that are so passionate, David Tanner. Y'all know him?
Mm-hmm.
He goes to the grocery store, he'll deliberately get in the longest line. Because that will give him time to talk to the person he's standing beside to try to talk to him about the gospel before they get through here. That's a mindset. And that's what we need to try to develop at stage 5.
Would that be the time if you part and the person is not willing to die with Christ?
Sure. And in fact, I've always tried to leave the booklet though when I do that with someone. And if you want to study this more or read it more, you know, if they're not, because, you know, like I said, not everybody responds right then. I probably would say about 50% of the people that I share the gospel with respond right then. But I'll give it another 2 weeks, probably goes up to about 60 or 70%. And I have some people that call me 2 years later. I said, Ken, I want to go back through that. He knew it was true. Something happened that he wanted to hear again. But the power is there. That's what God does. You know, we can have all kinds of techniques for this and that, but at the end of the day, they need to hear that message, however they can hear it. And if it doesn't produce the kind of results you want, don't let it throw you. Just keep trying to get that message in front of people. That's the real thing. No, but that's a good question, because if you get a congregation that's really doing this, you know, what you need to do is create a culture of evangelism. And so, you know, if you've got enough people, you know, you need to, the congregation needs to understand. I mean, we converted this one guy. This is a great story. I always had time to tell you all day. This guy was a Baptist disciple. And my wife was throwing a, what's that thing, the kitchen utensils? Hamper chair. Some lady wanted to do one of these, but she lived in a mobile home. She didn't have room. She asked my wife, could she use her? Well, Sharon said, okay. And so one of the people that was coming, her husband rode with her, and she said, well, I'd like to come, but my husband doesn't have anywhere. I said, well, let him come. We'll talk all this here this week. And then this guy was a disciple in the Baptist church. I don't know if you want. That's like when you get a new convert, you're assigned to a disciple, and he grows you and, you know, studies with you. So he was real high. And he'd been a drug addict years ago and had a road to Damascus conversion. So I took him, I said, well, we got chatted along. I said, well, hey, God, just take a few minutes and explain to you. I said, well, he said, sure. So I went through it. And it's like, and he leaned up and he said, he pointed his finger at me and he said, explain Paul's conversion. I can do that one. So I went through the thing there. In fact, that's where I created that. And when I read Acts 22:16, arise and be baptized and wash away your sin. He rocked back in his chair again for about 5 minutes. He leaned up and said, I need to be baptized right now. And he went and pulled his wife out of the party. And we had to drive right then. And on the way to the building, he explained the gospel of her. When we got there, she was ready to die with Christ and baptized him. I've never seen such rejoicing. I mean, they were literally jumping up and down in the aisle in their gowns, soaked and wet, thrilled. And so they come to church for the first time. Never been in the door. And we start singing, and they start getting. And my hair stood on me, and I went, oh, no. And to our credit, nobody said a word. And after about 3 weeks, he came over to me and said, Ken, he said, I don't understand. He said, you know, we're singing and we're getting it. I mean, that's my term. And he said, I noticed that nobody else is getting it. And he said, I just don't feel like I'm worshiping. And I said, well, you just have to get your priorities right. I said, first of all, this is something we're doing to God. The joy is to be pleasing Him. And I said, secondly, is we're to be edifying and encouraging one another. I said, you're way down the list. You just put yourself up at the top. And he went away and talked about it. And then I noticed they settled down. He said, I see it. Nothing. But had somebody gone to them, right off the bat, hey, we don't get it here. You know, that could have been. That's it. You've got to have a culture of evangelism. I'll tell you who's got a culture of evangelism. You don't study it? Jehovah's Witnesses. They don't meet on Sunday morning. They don't have assemblies on Sunday morning. You know when they meet? Sunday afternoon. You know why? Because Sunday morning is the best time to catch people at home. I mean, their whole, everything they do is geared around evangelism. Once a month, they'll have a service in the evenings, afternoon, just for the people that they're contacting. They call it, a seeker service. It's geared just for those people. Their whole culture is there. And we have the totally anti-evangelism culture, almost. But there's a lot we can do, and I don't have any magic bullets for that other than just to say that's what we need. We need to be given that thought and preparing the congregation that, you know, you can convert somebody. Well, they may not come to services every time the door's open. You know, I get that question a lot from preachers. I say, well, these people you converted once, especially. How good, how faithful are they? And the point is, how good a church of Christ are they? Well, they may not be. They're good. I usually, if I'm charitable, I'll say, well, they're about as faithful as the Ethiopian community. He just was converted, took off from his chariot to a country where there wasn't a church. But you can see the point. And I tell you this, the people that we converted are just soft. They're converted to Christ. What I think we have tried to do traditionally is we've tried to bring people to Christ through the church. And let me say this, I didn't engineer this approach. This approach just happened. But what I've discovered is, it's bringing people to the church through Christ. And it's a whole different game. You convert people to the church, they can leave that. They can go to another church. If you convert them to Christ, that's a whole different game. It's a whole different approach. We've just not had any problem with that. Now, but look at the parable of the sower. What happened there? A lot of people were converted. What happened to them? They didn't last, did they? So don't panic. You know, here with Brent, I think he converted like 24 people. The church there, I think the previous year had converted one or maybe two people. Within 6 months, he's converted 24 people, and then by a year later, I think four or five of those had left. They just, you know, didn't stick around. The elders are complaining. Like, boy, you look at this. You got, you know, you convert all these people and half of them are leaving. Some of them are leaving. Well, that's the parable of the sower. You know, not everybody's going to stick with it, but that's, you know, that doesn't deter us from what you need to be doing. Cultural evangelism will follow that model, and we'll see that model. Question over here. Come on. College guys, give me a question. Are y'all the college guys? No, forget it. High school guys. High school guys, any questions? No. Just when's this going to end, right? I don't know. Well, any other thoughts or things? I mean, I'll talk to you all day. I'm sure I haven't followed everything, but yes, ma'am. Well,
I really appreciate your being willing to do this.
I'll tell you what, I think it's wonderful. And I'll say that for my glory, this is wonderful. I'm so thankful. It changed my life. I was just rocking along, being a good churchgoer. But I wouldn't tell anybody about Jesus Christ. It has changed my life. Can you tell I'm passionate about it? And it's so simple. That's what just blows my mind. You know, I'm a math major, computer science major. You know, I work on the space program. You know, and I think that helped me because I kind of look at things as systems. And over time, I'm just trying to make sense of everything. And it's so simple. You don't have to be a rocket scientist. You don't have to be a scholar. You know, I went through this with a Hindu man. It was hilarious. This guy, he said, I've never heard of him. He said, I don't know Christianity. I don't know Jesus. He didn't know anything about anything. And I went through this with him, and he said, this is very believable. The resurrection just blew his mind. He said, I'm going to talk to my guru about this. Which means, that's the end of that. But I'm telling you, it's just incredible to see the effect this has. you know, and you just, you know, I just see all these things. You know, when Paul said, you know, I didn't come to you with superior speech or wisdom, I just know Jesus Christ and Him crucified. You know, I don't know what I thought that verse was saying all these years, but I understand that. I don't want to talk to anybody until they understand, behold the Lamb of God that takes away sin of the world. And that beautiful linkage, how Christ, the sacrificial system, how that links to Christ, and then how Romans 6 links the act of faith and baptism to the sacrificial system. Wow! That is just phenomenal. That's so powerful. And we live in an environment where we got hit with every gospel known to mankind. And nobody hears this. If they don't hear it from us, where are they going to hear it? When's it going to happen?
Just a comment. There's actually an individual that's a gentleman that is worshiping here now, and he was an atheist years ago. And so we asked him, you know, why did you think that way? And he said, it was easy. He said, all I had to do was say I'm an atheist, and people would run in the other direction. And he never had to confront anything because nobody ever challenged him.
Well, like
that's
I said,
the way we get paranoid against.
With my atheist, I did the same with my atheist friend. Well, he's an atheist. That's rocky ground. I know he didn't want to hear the gospel, but I did, and it was like, okay, that's interesting. Never thought about that. Never heard it. All most people have heard about the Bible is what they've been told by the press or by, you know, the culture, which is just now, you know, just trying to shoot holes in it in a way it can. And very few have actually seen it. But I thank you for your comment. But, you know, and I'm thankful and I'm grateful to do this. It, you know, it's just wonderful stuff. And I'm happy to try to serve God doing this any way I can, wherever I can. I've never turned down a request, no matter where it was in the world. And, you know, it's, like I said, it's not for my glory. But I'm thankful to be able to do it. And I appreciate y'all having me here. Hope that y'all can create some leaven here and just do it. And keep in mind, it's not about trying to achieve results. It's about the joy of sharing with people something that is joyous to us and what Christ did for us. And in the process, we may clear up some confusion for an atheist or an agnostic or a Baptist. Pentecostal, or some of these people that are following in the Gospels. There's joy in that. Okay, anything? Anything else? Going once? Going twice? All right.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome, brother. Appreciate you asking.
We have 50 of the flip charts on their way. We talked to Dan DeGarmo 2 weeks ago. They were out of those flip charts. He had to order more from the publisher, so that's why they were delayed. We were hoping that he said, I might be able to get them to you by Friday. They didn't come in, but they're on their way. If we run out of those, we'll get more. Dan says he will get several thousand dozen at a time. And we do already have these books back here. Thanks, Alan, thinking ahead, getting some of those ordered. We have one left. Okay, we're going to get some going.
That was mine.
Oh, that's
too.
And that's yours too. So we'll get some more of those in. So, and one other thing I've been thinking about, I haven't talked with Steve and Jeff or Gerald yet, but Bill Miller approached me recently about let's get a, he didn't use this term, I'll say, a new convert class going. And I'm very interested in doing that. And rather than having two adult classes going on, have one downstairs, well, we're just going to adult class, we just have to go to one of the other buildings on our campus. But having a room downstairs for that ongoing new convert class, if we're doing our work here with this, it's going to lead to that. And that's something, yes.
Imagine a church where every member is passionately, wholeheartedly, and recklessly calling the shots.
I have a busy work week, and by the time Sunday rolls around, I'm tired. So how about a church service that starts when I get there?
Can do. When you arrive, we begin.
This guy, he plays by his own rules. We want to find a church where if he starts screaming, we're not the bad guys. Right? Come here.
Say no more. If your baby's screaming, you stay seated. The others around you can leave.
You know, financially, Sherry and I don't give a lot to the church, but we'd sure like to know who does.
All right, if you join now, you'll know what every person gives in detail.
When I'm in the church service, can my car get a buff and a wax?
Not just that, but an oil change and a tune-up.
Hey, how about tickets to the Super Bowl?
That's asking too much.
I'm serious. If I'm going to join, I want tickets to the big game.
All right, you join now and we'll get you there.
I like a pony.
Look in your backyard. Me Church, where it's all about you.